the Book of Judges. It's a tale of chaos unleashed, of violence unchained, and of a moral compass spinning wildly out of control. Ancient Israel's story? Perhaps. But as we peel back the pages, we'll find a mirror reflecting our own tumultuous times. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Sound familiar? Well, join us over the next few weeks as we study the Book of Judges, ancient wisdom for modern chaos. Our story begins now. Judges chapter 6, verse 33 to 7:25. Now, all the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples joined forces and crossed over the Jordan and camped in the valley of Jezreel. Then the Spirit of the Lord came on Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, summoning the Abiezrites to follow him. He sent messengers throughout Manasseh, calling them to arms, and also into Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, so that they too went up to meet them. Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hand, as you have promised, look, I will place a wool of fleece on the threshing floor. If there is dew only on the fleece and all the ground is dry, then I will know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you said." And that is what happened. Gideon rose early the next day. He squeezed the fleece and wrung out the dew, a bowl full of water. Then Gideon said to God, "Do not be angry with me. Let me make just one more request. Allow me one more test with the fleece, but this time make the fleece dry and let the ground be covered with dew." That night God did so. Only the fleece was dry, all the ground was covered with dew. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all his men camped at the spring of Harod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel will boast against me. My own strength has saved me. Now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead." So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. But the Lord said to Gideon, "There are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will thin them out for you there. If I say, 'This one shall go with you,' he shall go. But if I say, 'This one shall not go with you,' he shall not go." So Gideon took the men down to the water. There the Lord told him, "Separate those who lap the water with their tongues as a dog laps from those who kneel down to drink." 300 of them drank from cupped hands, lapping like dogs. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. The Lord said to Gideon, "With the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the others go home." So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites home, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and trumpets of the others. Now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley. During that night, the Lord said to Gideon, "Get up, go down against the camp, because I am going to give it into your hands. If you are afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Pua and listen to what they are saying. Afterwards, you will be encouraged to attack the camp." So he and Pua, his servant, went down to the outpost of the camp. The Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the other eastern peoples had settled in the valley, thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the seashore. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. "I had a dream," he was saying. "A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed." His friend responded, "This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands." When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he bowed down and worshipped. He returned to the camp of Israel and called out, "Get up! The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands." Dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them, with torches inside. "Watch me," he told them. "Follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp, blow yours and shout, 'For the Lord and for Gideon.'" Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just after they changed the guard. They blew their trumpets and broke the jars that were in their hands. The three companies blew the trumpets and smashed the jars. Grasping the torch in their left hands and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow, they shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon!" While each man held his position round the camp, all the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. When the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. The army fled to Beth Shittah, towards Zerirah, as far as the border of Abel Mehalah, near Tabath. Israelites from Naphtali, Asher, and all Manasseh were called out, and they pursued the Midianites. Gideon sent messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim, saying, "Come down against the Midianites and seize the waters of the Jordan, ahead of them as far as Beth Bara." So all the men of Ephraim were called out, and they seized the waters of the Jordan as far as Beth Bara. They also captured two of the Midianite leaders, Oreb and Zeb. They killed Oreb at the Rock of Oreb, and Zeb at the winepress of Zeb. They pursued the Midianites and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon, who was by the Jordan. Just for a moment, imagine you were Gideon. Imagine standing on the hillside and looking down at the 135,000 warriors packed like locusts across a valley. Their camels, what we have described here, countless as grains of sand on the seashore. It's fair to say that sight alone would make anyone's heart sink, right? Now imagine that God said to you, go and face them with just 300 men armed with clay pots and trumpets. I mean, that is the story of Gideon we've just seen, isn't it? It's a story of impossible odds. But here's the thing. It's not just his story. It's a story that challenges us to ask, well, do we really listen to God when he speaks? Do we trust him? Or, as we've seen through Judges so far, do we hesitate? Do we compromise? See, Israel's problem wasn't just external. It wasn't just the Midianites oppressing them. The real issue is their heart. Over time, Israel had drifted away from God. Not in big, dramatic ways, but in the quiet, in the subtle compromises. Bit by bit, they let the voices of the nations around them drown out the voice of their true deliverer. I mean, God has called them out on it already earlier in Judges 6. Let's go back up to Judges 6, verse 10. Remember what the prophet had said? The prophet, God has said through his prophet, he said, "I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live. But," what's the issue? "You have not listened to me." That's the heart of the issue, isn't it? The heart of Israel's problem is that they have failed to listen. They have failed to trust and obey like there's no other way. And if we're honest, that's a problem we can recognise ourselves, isn't it? So tonight, as we look at Gideon's story, we're asking, how do we keep sight of God as our true deliverer? How do we keep trusting him, especially when everything in us wants to rely somewhere else? Well, the story of Gideon tonight gives us the answer. We keep sight of God by fully trusting and obeying his words. Remember where he first met Gideon, the so-called mighty warrior? He was hiding in a winepress. He's not exactly inspiring, is he? But what did God do? God doesn't call the mighty. He makes mighty those who listen. And so Gideon rescued his hometown. But Israel needed more than just a local hero. They needed someone who would lead them in truly listening to God and leading them back to their deliverer. So could Gideon be that man? Let's turn to our passage and find out, shall we? Come with me to Judges chapter 6, verse 33. See, there we find the Midianites and their allies. They are flooding the valley, thick as locusts, with camels as countless as sand. 135,000 soldiers, we're told later on. That's an unstoppable force, isn't it? But God had already told Gideon what's going to happen. Back in verse 14, the Lord turned to Gideon and said, "Go in the strength that I've given you and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" So we find here Gideon, he gets clothed in God's spirit. He blows the trumpet, he rallies the troops. Great, Ready for battle, here we go! But then we get the famous fleece test, don't we? Our mighty warrior is more like a mighty warrior. See, God has promised something, but Gideon wants proof. And here we see our gracious God. Our gracious God who provides graciously for warriors. Have a look down at verse 36. Just notice the cheek. Listen out for the cheek here. Gideon said to God, if you will save Israel by my hand, as you promised, look, I will place a wool fleece on the fleshing floor. If there is dew or only on the fleece and all the ground is dry, then I will know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you said. If. Did you catch that? If God will do as God promised. It's like saying to a master chef, if you really know how to cook, or saying to the builder who's doing your extension, if you really know how to use a hammer, I mean, more than that, Gideon is saying this to the creator of the universe, isn't he? In fact, if you look really carefully, Gideon's not using God's name in this part. Gideon doesn't call him the Lord, as we have elsewhere. He calls him by the generic name God. He is treating the Lord, the covenant-keeping God, who rescued Israel out of Egypt, as though he's just another God to be bargained with. And that's a symptom of Israel's larger problem, isn't it? They have stopped treating the Lord as their true deliverer, and Gideon is reflecting that drift. Just notice here, it is not that Gideon needs guidance. It is not that Gideon needs direction. God has been clear. This is not a moment of guidance. This is a moment of doubt. The fleece is a doubting moment. But what does God do? Well, he graciously answers. The fleece is wet, the ground is dry. Now, you'd think that'd be enough, wouldn't you? But Gideon still isn't sure. He goes back for round 2, verse 39. Don't be angry with me. Let me make just one more request. Allow me one more test with the fleece. But this time, make the fleece dry and let the ground be covered in dew. Do you see that? Gideon knows that this is wrong. We're not meant to copy this. Just allow me one more test. It's like the engine of his faith is spluttering and he can't just get it to start. In fact, that word test there is loaded. The word test there is the word that God has already used for what he's doing to the Israelites and judges. He's testing, he's demonstrating what they're really like. But it's also the word that Israel used back when they rebelled in Exodus 17, shortly after their rescue from Egypt. You see, we have Gideon here. He was set up in our last passage as a new Moses. But he's more like the rebellious generation in the wilderness, here in Judges 6. God has spoken clearly. Gideon does not need guidance. God has promised. Gideon doesn't trust God. He falls into the habits of Israel. What did Moses say after that incident, Deuteronomy 6? Do not put the Lord your God to the test, as you did at Massah. But watch how God responds, verse 40. That night, God did so. Only the fleece was dry. All the ground was covered with dew. Where Gideon compromises, God shows compassion. Where we worry, God works. Where we doubt, God delivers. This mighty warrior is about to learn that God's grace is bigger than our greatest fears. So the next morning, our mighty warrior is ready. Well, as ready as he's ever going to be. Finally convinced by a piece of wet and a piece of dry wool, Gideon musters his troops, 32,000 men. I mean, sure, they're outnumbered 4-1, but at least it's something, right? And this brings us to our second point. You see, the Lord is the only warrior his people need. You see, that humongous army is still waiting for battle. Those 135,000 there on the battlefield. But then God drops what looks or must have felt like a mighty bombshell. Have a look at verse 2. You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me. Too many men? I mean, that must be the first in military history. But God isn't interested in military history, is he? God isn't interested in numbers. He is interested in his people's hearts. He's not just pruning an army, he's pruning their pride. He's not just reducing numbers, he's reducing their self-reliance. So first, verse 3, God says to Gideon, anyone who's afraid can go home. And 22,000 soldiers take off like that. Two-thirds of the army, gone. How's that looking now? Now it's just one Israelite for every 13 Midianites. You see there, it's not just Gideon who fears. Israel fear too. Gideon's a picture of what Israel is like. Back in Deuteronomy 20, verse 8, God gave this command. He said, the officer shall add, is anyone afraid or faint-hearted? Let them go home, so that his fellow soldiers will not become disheartened too. That bit of Deuteronomy is talking about those who do not trust God is with them. You are afraid to fight if you don't believe God's with you. It's exactly what Gideon's doing here, isn't it? Remember the cry from last time? The Midianites are here. That means God's not with us. We have Gideon, a warrior, leading a whole army of warriors. There is a fear pandemic in Israel. But God's not done thinning the ranks. Verse 4, there are still too many men. God says he's going to thin out the people further. And so, through a bizarre drinking etiquette test, the people get reduced down to 300. We've gone from 32,000 to 300. And just to make the point, this is not Sparta. So I'm sure Gideon wished it was. Now, this is God's mathematics, where less equals more, because God plus anything equals everything you need. Final count, this is mathematically accurate, 300 against 135,000. That is 450 to 1. How do you like those odds? Let's put that in perspective. I mean, the paper works. But just imagine, you walked into Wembley Stadium with your two best mates. And then you had to fight everyone else in the stadium. That is the numbers. If God asked you to face 450 to 1 odds, would you trust him to deliver? But here's the beautiful irony. God isn't just weakening Israel's army. He's strengthening their opportunity for faith. He wasn't reducing their chance of victory. He was removing the chance for self-reliance. Why? We've said it already. Israel's greatest enemy isn't Midian. It's their pride. It's their tendency to trust their own strength instead of the God who delivered them. In a world that's obsessed with bigger, better, more, God says, watch what I can do with less. Because when it comes to faith, you don't need a bigger army. We need a bigger trust in the one true God. Because the Lord is the only warrior his people need. And so God calls warriors to listen to him. It's the night before the battle. Can you imagine? Gideon lying awake, rolling over the odds in his mind. 300 versus 135,000. Every logical part of him must have been screaming, this just can't work. This can't be right. We've all been there, haven't we? The night before an exam, the night before a big presentation, the night before a tough conversation, the doubts start to creep in, don't they? But look what God does, verse 9. Get up, go down against the camp, because I am going to give it into your hands. God doesn't leave Gideon in his fear. God speaks. But knowing Gideon's heart, God does more. He invites Gideon to sneak down and eavesdrop on the Midianite camp. So Gideon and his servant, they creep to the edge of the camp. And just at that moment, they overhear a Midianite soldier telling his friend about a bizarre dream. A loaf of barley bread rolls into their camp and knocks down the tent. I mean, that's strange, isn't it? But what's even stranger is how the other soldier responds. Verse 14. This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands. Do you catch the irony? Gideon is there, trembling on the hillside, struggling to trust God's direct words to him, whilst a Midianite, a random Midianite soldier, is absolutely certain that this random dream his buddies had is giving Gideon the victory. God is so in charge of all things, so much so, that that soldier had that dream and that friend interpreted exactly that way, just as Gideon happened to be there at that exact moment. That is our God for you. Of course he could smash that army. See, God didn't need to give Gideon that chance, did he? But he met Gideon where he was, because that is who God is. He is patient, compassionate, gracious. And it's that moment that's the turning point for Gideon's story. Gideon finally gets it. The mighty warrior becomes the mighty warrior. The O's and the A's are switched around. But let's not miss the lesson here, shall we? Gideon could have trusted God from the very beginning, couldn't he? God's word has always been enough. But Gideon needed those reassurances of other voices. Isn't that true for us as well? How often do we rely on what other people say? On what our circumstances seem to be saying? Rather than trusting what God has already said. See, when God speaks, you don't need a second opinion. And so final thing we see this evening. Listening to God leads to victory. At last Gideon gets it. He's not the hesitant man in the winepress anymore. He's no longer the doubter with the fleece. Verse 15, he worships. Fear has turned to faith, and now comes the battle. Gideon gathers the 300 men. He splits them into three groups. Then he gives them their weapons, trumpets, clay jars, and torches. No swords, no shields, just jars and noisemakers against an army of 135,000. Imagine standing there holding a clay jar, staring down a sea of soldiers when the odds are like this. And the plan, great military strategy here, we'll blow the trumpets, smash the jars, hold up the torches. If I was in that army, I'd be thinking, this is madness. But Gideon, he understands it's not about the plan, it's about the deliverer. So in the dead of night, they approach the camp, they blow their trumpets, they smash their jars, they raise their torch and they shout, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. And then they do nothing. Verse 21, 300 men stand still, torches blazing. They don't draw their swords, they don't have any. They don't charge. They simply watch as God turns chaos loose in the Midianite camp. The enemy soldiers, they panic. They draw their swords on one another. They cry out. They flee into the night. Gideon's army didn't even lift a finger. God won the battle. God alone is the deliverer. God didn't even need 300, did he? God delivers a complete victory through the most unconventional means because when the Almighty God is on your side, it does not matter what the odds are. If our God is for us, who can be against us? So Israel, they pursue the army to the waters of the Jordan. The Midianite leaders, Oreb and Zeb, are captured and executed. And the army is done for the day. So what does that mean for us? If God alone is our true deliverer, then trusting him means letting go of our need for signs, letting go of our own self-reliance, quieting the voices that compete with his. When we listen to God, when we truly listen to God, we can be delivered from fear and doubt and the need to compromise. If our God is like this, why would you compromise? If our God is like this, why would you go elsewhere? Gideon's story calls us to trust not because we've seen enough, but because God has said enough. And right now, right this moment, he is speaking through his word to you. So the question is, are we listening? Because Gideon's story shows us the real battle isn't against Midian. It's about trusting God's word. The real challenge was believing his promises. And his word is still at work today. His word is still enough today. Centuries later, Isaiah echoed this truth to a people in darkness, facing exile, facing despair, under the shadow of death. He says, "For, as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." Is God really with us? Said the people of Gideon's day. Is God really with us? So the people of Isaiah's day. Is God really with us? Isn't that the question we can ask today? And God's answer is clear. Jesus Christ, Emmanuel, that is God with us, has come to prove it. Like Gideon, we're so often gripped by fear and tempted to look elsewhere. But his story shows us that when we trust God, God works mightily. God's power is made perfect in weakness, and his victory is guaranteed. So will we trust him and live like his promises are true? Let's pray we listen to the story of Gideon and put it into practice. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Any questions can be sent to podcast@david-couch.com. I'll see you again next time.